so incredible. I'm going to touch on that just a little bit, but first I want to touch on, I want to talk about the Joseph. That was so powerful, the Joseph account. You know, Joseph, this was a type. This was the type of Yeshua. You know, they both were sold. 30 pieces of silver, 20 pieces of silver. And I got into the numbers thing. 2, 3, 4. All those numbers are significant throughout the Bible. It's a long, long study once you get into it. But the silver, there's a spiritual significance with the silver. Silver spiritually signifies atonement or redemption. So it wasn't no accident or coincidence that they were sold for silver, because Yeshua HaMashiach, he was atoned for us. He was our redemption, and that's, you know, we needed that. And we see that in Exodus 30:15. It says, "The rich shall not give more, and the poor shall not give less than a half a shekel of silver. When they give an offering unto the Lord to make an atonement for your souls." And in Titus 2:14, "Who gave himself for us, that he might redeem us from all iniquity, and purify unto himself a peculiar people, zealous of good works, Christ was also sold for 30 pieces of silver." Joseph, this story, it was incredible. But what I want to talk about is that his father was Jacob, and how this thing was passed down, because you know there was turmoil with them, with Esau and Jacob, and now you see this turmoil with Joseph and his brothers. You know, it was favoritism. They showed favor. You know, Isaac favored Esau, Rebekah favored Jacob. We've seen that in the last Torah. And here we see again right here, Jacob, he's favoring Joseph. He gives him this beautiful coat. And his other brothers, they didn't like it at all. They didn't like it for the fact that his daddy gave him the coat and that he was showing favoritism. And then, you know, it says they out in the field, and the daddy sends him. He says, tells Joseph to go check on his brothers, go with him. And, before that, he's 17. He's 17 years old, and he's pastoring the flock. He goes back and tells, he was honest. He was an honest person. They was doing something that they wasn't supposed to. So he went back, and he gave a bad report. Now, if you got a sibling, or whoever has a sibling up here, brother, sister, you know, 17 years old, 16 years old, your sister, your brother go tell mom and dad on you, you're going to be upset with them. So that was another thing that they couldn't stand him for that. That he was, they call it a tattletale, so you want to say. But he was honest. And that's what the dad, that's why his father favored him, because he was honest and he obeyed everything his father asked him to do. So he sends him away. He sends him to go check on him. And they see him from far away, it says. Now, I'm pretty sure the first thing they noticed was this big old bright coat. I know they probably couldn't see his face, but they knew that was him. And here, I could imagine what they was thinking. Oh, here come this dreamer. Here he come. Look at the tattletale. Look at the tattletale coming. Boy, and as he got close, you know, I'm pretty sure they scheming. They want to, okay, so now they want to hurt him. They want to kill him, was what they want to do. And another thing that stuck out to me is when, you know, after they put him in the pit, they sat down to eat. Now here he is in this hole, in this pit, it's cold, and he's probably begging them to let him out. He's probably crying to him. I mean, your brother is in the pit, and they sit down right there to eat. And I was just like, wow, you're kidding me. But notice, Joseph, what they did, what animal they killed? They killed a goat. What did Rebekah and Jacob do? Killed a goat to put the hair All this is significant. And how it just comes. You want to say it was karma, but it wasn't karma. They slaughtered a goat. And then it says, well, then you go to Judah and Tamar. We know that what happened right here with Judah. Judah was his brother, and he tried to stop it. We know that's where that's where Christ is. That's the lineage, the bloodline that he come from Perez, his son Perez. But I want to start in 39. It says, chapter 39, verse 1, just how everything was going so bad for Joseph. That's what we would think. But how the hand of God was just in every single detail. That was everything he was going through. The hand of God was there. What the enemy really thought that he was doing was getting ready to had the brothers wanting to kill him and destroy him. The hand of God was in his life and upon his every step, all the way. And you know that's we live in that society today. Brothers will kill a brother right now. They wouldn't think twice about it. Family killing the family members. And it's just so sad. But I tell you, God was so, his hand, the sovereign hand of Elohim was so powerful. And it says, now Joseph had been brought down to Egypt, and Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh, the captain of the guard, an Egyptian had brought him from the Ishmaelites and had brought him down there. Now he was sold twice. He was sold to the caravan of peoples coming through, and then he was sold to the officer in Potiphar's house. So two times he was sold at 17 years old. And then in verse 2, but look, it says, Yahweh was with Joseph, and he became a successful man, and he was in the house of his Egyptian master. His master saw that Yahweh was with him and that Yahweh caused all that he had to succeed. He wasn't sold to be in the field of work. He was sold into the house of Potiphar's officer. He says, so Joseph found favor in the sight and attended him, and he made him overseer of his house and put him in charge of all that he had. From the time that he had made him overseer in his house and over all that he had, Yahweh blessed the Egyptian's house for Joseph's sake. The blessing of Yahweh was on all that he had in the house and field. And Joseph and Judah, get back to these two brothers right quick. They both were separated from their families, and they both was tempted. And I'm going to read the Joseph account, but we know Judah also was tempted. He seen the harlot. Oh, and what he did, it said he went into, oh, let me come into you. Let me have relation, whatever, however you want to call it. But Joseph, he refused it. It wasn't what he wanted to do. It says, so he left all that he had in Joseph's charge, and because of him he had no concern about anything but the food he ate. Now Joseph was handsome in form and appearance, and after a time his master's wife cast her eyes on Joseph and said, lie with me. But he refused and said to his master's wife, behold, because of me my master has no concern about anything in the house, and he has put everything that he has in charge. He is not greater in this house than I am, nor has he kept back anything from me except you, because you are his wife. How then can I do this great wickedness, and notice, sin against Elohim? It was about he had respect for his master, but he wasn't no way, shape, or form where he's going to let that come in between him and his father, him and Elohim. He said, how then can I do this great wickedness and sin against Elohim? She didn't give up. And she spoke to Joseph day after day. This must have went on for a long, long time. And he kept rejecting it, kept rejecting it, kept rejecting it. Until one day he goes into the house, and then she grabs him. She takes his garment. He runs away. She takes his garment. And then, she's telling the servants of the house, and then here comes Joseph's master. in verse 20. Let's read 19. As soon as his master heard the words that his wife spoke to him, "This is the way your servant treated me," his anger was kindled, and Joseph's masters took him and put him into prison, the place where the king's prisoners were confined, and he was there in prison. Now he's in prison. Now, he's not in this, what we got prison, what we call a prison. He's in the inner. He probably sleeping on the ground, like the little rats and stuff. And he pretty sure he's got all that running around him. But he don't have Pastor Charlotte's little muff and all this to cover himself up. He don't have none of those things. So you think, man, Joseph is going, he's going through it. He's done been sold twice. His brothers hated him from day one. He gets sold to it. Now he's this Egyptian woman's lying on him. And here he is, them been put in prison. But look in verse 21. But Yahweh was with Joseph and showed him steadfast love and gave him favor in the sight of the keeper of the prison. And the keeper of the prison put Joseph in charge of all the prisoners who were in prison. Whatever was done there, he was the one who did it. The keeper of the prison paid no attention to anything that was in Joseph's charge because Yahweh was with him. And whatever he did, Yahweh made it. He made it succeed because he was faithful. And not, he probably was thinking, you know, I'm pretty sure he had his whys and his why and how. I mean, how could this be? I'm faithful. I'm keeping your word. I'm not defiling my master's house. And he's got all these questions. But yeah, Yahweh made it succeed. Then he comes to the two prisoners come down the cupbearer and the chief cupbearer and the baker, and you know they have these dreams. And Joseph was a dreamer. He was a dreamer. And in verse 8 of 40, it says, they said to him, "We have had dreams, and there is no one to interpret them." And Joseph said to them, "Do not interpretations belong to Elohim? Please tell them to me." So they tell him the dream, and Joseph gives to the first one, the chief cupbearer. He tells him, and boy, he tells him that he's going to be restored back to Pharaoh's house, to his right. I don't even know if it says his right. To Pharaoh, put the cup back in his hand. So the chief, he tells him that he's going to be restored back up there. So the chief, it was the cupbearer and the baker gets all excited, all right, because, boy, he heard what Joseph told the chief cupbearer. So he's like, "Hey, I had a dream too." But when he interpreted his dream, oh, man. I just could imagine the look on his face, the expression, once he told him what his dream was, is not what he wanted to hear. And it happens. Just like he said, it happened. And then Joseph tells the chief cupbearer, he says, "Just don't forget me. When you tell Pharaoh, just don't forget me." What he does, doesn't even mention his name. He's still in prison. He still is in prison. But what I got out of it, and you go along the story, and Pharaoh wound up having a dream, and Joseph's the only one that can interpret. But all what he went through, he still praised Yahweh. He was faithful to him. He never cursed him or never turned his back on him. No matter what he was going through, he knew that he was in the hand of Yahweh. And you think about that. Well, and as you're doing this, as you're reading this, you're thinking of your life. You're thinking about when you come up against something. Are we going to be like Joseph? Are we going to hold on? Are we going to hold on to his promise? Are we going to hold on to his word, what he said to us? So that's what I got out of the Genesis, the Joseph part. And I want to talk a little bit about Amos. In Amos 2, And, you know, here's the judgment on Israel. And I really enjoyed this. I'll probably read and just stop and comment on a couple of verses. It says, judgment on Israel. Thus says Yahweh, for three transgressions of Israel, and for four, I will not revoke the punishment, because they all sell the righteous for silver, and the needy for a pair of sandals. Those who trample the head of the poor into the dust of the earth and turn aside the way of the afflicted. A man and his father go into the same girl, so that my holy name is profaned. Let they lay themselves down beside their altar and garments, taking pledge, and in the house of their Elohim they drink. They drink the wine of those who have been fined. Yet it was I, listen to verse 9, 10, and 11, because he's reminding them of the mercies that they have received. He's reminding them. He says, yet it was I who destroyed the Amorite before them, whose height was like the height of cedars, and who was on strong, and who was as strong as the oaks. I destroyed his fruit above and his roots beneath. Also, it was I who brought you up out of the land of Egypt and led you 40 years in the wilderness to possess the land of the Amorites. And I raised up some of your sons for prophets and some of your young men for Nazarites. Is it not indeed so, O people of Israel, declares Yahweh? You know, sometimes we need a little reminding. You know, and we got one not too long ago. Last year, I think it was, we all got one. It was a little reminding. I, Yahweh, called you to do this. I, Yahweh, got my hand upon y'all. Verses 11 and 12, we see it was a little, some ingratitude and unfaithfulness right here in this Amos account is what it was. It says in verse 13 through 16, it says, behold, I will press you down in your place as a cart full of sheaves pressed down. Flight shall perish from the swift, and the strong shall not retain his strength, nor shall the mighty save his life. He who handles the bow shall not stand, and he who is swift of foot shall not save himself, nor shall he who rides the horse save his life. And he who is stout of heart among the mighty shall flee away naked in that day, declares the Lord. What he's telling right here, when you reject the word of Elohim, you can't escape the consequences. You cannot escape the consequences when you reject his word. That's why it's so important when you get a word, you hold on to it. Just like Pastor said, you hold on. You hold on to that word no matter what. And no matter what your course that it looks like is going, no matter how bad it looks like you're going this way or that way, or how rough it might look, no matter what, you hold on to it, because his word, if you don't do it, that you will face consequences. And in Amos 3, let's see, we'll start with verse 1. Hear this word that Yahweh has spoken against you, O people of Israel, against the whole family that I brought up out of the land of Egypt. You only have I known of all the families of the earth. Therefore, I will punish you for all your iniquities. Do two walk together unless they have agreed to meet? God cannot walk together. Elohim cannot walk. Man and Elohim cannot walk together except they are agreed. Unless we seek his glory, we cannot walk with him. We have to seek his glory. Does a lion roar in the forest? Does he has no prey when he has no prey? Does a young lion cry out from the den if he has taken nothing? Does a bird fall in a snare on the earth when there is no trap for it? Does a snare spring up from the ground when it has taken nothing? Is a trumpet blown in a city and the people are not afraid? Does disaster come to a city unless Yahweh has done it? For the Lord Elohim does nothing without revealing his secret to his servants, the prophets. The lion has roared, who will not fear? The Lord Elohim has spoken, who can but prophesy? In verse 4 through 8, there's the threatening of the word and the providence of God against the sin of man are certain, and certainly show that the judgment of God are at hand. Nor will God remove the affliction he has sent till it has done its work. And I wasn't going to talk about John because I did John in the Bible study Thursday night, but there was something I want to, as they was reading, there was something that I was reminded of about the woman, the Samaritan, the woman at the well. You know, the Jews didn't have dealings with the Samaritans. And Brother Troy pointed this out after we, you know, everybody was just mentioning and commenting on it. How she went back to tell him, but she went with excitement. She said, come see a man that told me everything that I have ever done. Everything that I ever done. And that's the kind of excitement we need to have as believers. We got to have when we go to witness or we go to share Yahweh or his son Yeshua, we ought to do it with excitement. We ought to make them want to. She brought them. They came. The Samaritans came. You know, it says the fields, he said right before they came that the fields is ready for harvest. They was coming. He could see them coming. He said, they're ready for harvest. Look at them coming. And they came and they said, let me read it. It says, many Samaritans from the town believed in him because of the woman's testimony. So they believed him because of that, because she went there, she was pumped. He told me all that I ever did. So when the Samaritans came to him, they asked him to stay with them, and he stayed there 2 days, and many more believed because of his word. They said to the woman, it is no longer because of what you said that we believe, for we have heard for ourselves, and we know that this is indeed the Savior of the world. And just a little bit on this revelation, because this revelation was so powerful, so powerful. I just, you can't imagine what John, what he was seeing. It was just totally awesome. And I'm just going to touch on verses 1 through 8. Done hid it from myself. It says in chapter 21, verse 1 through 8, it says, and I saw a new heaven and a new earth, for the first heaven and the first earth were passed away, and there was no more sea. And I saw John, and I, John, saw the holy city, New Jerusalem, coming down from Elohim out of heaven, prepared as a bride adorned for her husband. And I heard a great voice out of heaven saying, behold, the tabernacle of Elohim is with men, and he will dwell with them, and they shall be his people, and Yahweh himself shall be with them and be their Elohim. And Elohim will wipe away all the tears from their eyes, and there shall be no more death, neither sorrow, nor crying, neither there shall be any more pain, for the former things are passed away. And he had sat upon the throne, and he that sat upon the throne said, behold, I make all things new. And he said unto me, write, for these words are true and faithful. And he said unto me, it is done. I am the Alpha and the Omega, the beginning and the end. I will give unto him that is athirst of the fountain of the water of life freely. He that overcometh shall inherit all things, and I will be his Elohim, and he shall be my son. But the fearful and unbelieving and the abominable and murderers and wrong whoremongers and sorcerers and idolaters and all liars shall have their part in the lake which burneth with fire and brimstone, which is the second death. The new heaven and the new earth, the old world, with all its troubles and tumults, will have passed away. Freedom from conflicting passions, temptations, troubles, change and alarms, for from whatever can divide or interrupt the communion of saints, the presence of God with us will not be interrupted as it is on earth. He will dwell with us continually. All effects of former trouble shall be done away. We often have been in tears for many things, for reasons of sin, affliction, or worries of the world. But no signs, no remembrance of former sorrows shall remain. Christ makes all things new. In verse 6, the certainty of the promise he gives us. And I got to read it again. He says, and he said unto me, this is the certainty of the promise. It is done. I am the Alpha and the Omega, the beginning and the end. And I will give unto him that is athirst of the fountain of the water of life freely. I'm the dominant one, is what he's telling us. The New Jerusalem is the church of God in its new and perfect state. And that's what I got out of this Torah. No matter what we're going through, just like Joseph, it looked horrible. The enemy, he just knew he was going to kill him, destroy him. But the sovereign hand, when we faithful to him, and we surrender our all, we give it all to him, we hold nothing back for ourselves and tell him it's all his. That's when we just trust him that he's going to lead us and guide us. It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable to know the fact to where you know, even when it looks horrible, you do what he says to do no matter what. And I tell you, I myself seen that personally, the hand of God upon my life, because it was bad, very bad. And that's exactly what the enemy, what the word was to me and my wife, that what the enemy meant for bad, what God had turned around for good, is just, it's amazing. If he did it in the natural, what is he doing in the spirit? Oh, I tell you what. When I was reading that, just that's what things that come back to your mind, a word that was given to you, and it's so powerful. And I just love him and appreciate him and thank y'all for coming tonight and letting me share this. It's so much more. I'm telling you, when you start with the numbers, it was too much going in my brain. It was hurting. I couldn't get into it. I just had to do the little silver, because that was really stuck out to me about the significance. I was an atonement and redemption. But let's not forget we have a staff meeting tomorrow, 9:00. So be here for 9:00 and church in the morning. Be ready. Let's come to worship. Come to give him all the praise and the glory and honor that he deserves. He deserves so much more. We can't give him enough. Amen. Thank y'all. You're dismissed.